side. And it is really quite something, really spectacular. So, Raghunath Das was editing that. And it's quite, it's a vivid and quite lengthy description of how different people are committing suicide, like gopis, Vishakha, Lalita, and others. So it's intensely traumatic. And Raghunath Das, he got into this, and it was so overwhelming that he got too overwhelmed, and he became totally incapacitated. Even to the point, the emotional symptoms, like, you know, Lord Chaitanya, sometimes his limbs would withdraw into his body or become elongated somehow at the joints. So it was just like, or like when that fisherman found Lord Chaitanya, caught Lord Chaitanya in his net. He couldn't even make out, what is this? And he touched Lord Chaitanya, sort of, you know, touched him. And just by that touch, momentary touch, ecstatic love of God was transmitted to him, and he was overwhelmed. But he didn't know what was going on, so he thought he'd become possessed by the ghost. My body is shaking. I'm falling on the ground. I'm crying. And he didn't understand. I got elevated instantaneously from the level of fisherman to the level of bhava in a split second. He thought I got possessed by a ghost. So he panicked. Anyway, so Raghunath Das, he got so overwhelmed that it became too much for his body. And it looked like his body would actually be physically, like it would tear itself to pieces by the force of the emotions. So then they tried to take the book away, but he wouldn't give it. He said, no, Rupa Goswami ordered me, I have to edit it, so I'm not giving it to you. So they couldn't get it away from him. But whenever he would even look at it, or even not look at it, but so they thought he was going to die. In fact, it was apparent that he was going to die. So what they did, they went to Vrindavan town, 25 kilometers away or so, and they told Rupa Goswami, this is happening, you've got to do something. So Rupa Goswami thought, and then he came up with a very clever strategy. He quickly wrote another very short book called Dhan Keli Chintamani. This is a book about Radha and Krishna meeting, and all the gopis and cowherd boys meeting on Govardhan Hill and having a big tax collecting pastime. So it's like a very jolly, very happy pastime of meeting. So Rupa Goswami quickly wrote this book. It's not a long book. And personally brought it out to Radha Kund and told Raghunath Das, you know, there are a few alterations I want to make to this other Lalita Madhava. So just give it back. And you work on this book now. So Raghunath Das, who was just about completely finished, by the strength of the order of Rupri, took that Dhan Keli Chintamani. As soon as he opened it, Radha and Krishna are meeting in great happiness and joy. And so then he became happy, and he didn't die. And everything came back to sort of, you know, whatever you'd call normal for Raghunath Das Goswami. So, you know, Mother Yashoda, who knows what it's like? She knows. We can only have a glimpse or something like that. But what happened here is, there she was, throwing Krishna into the air, and catching him. And he was laughing, and she was enjoying. Suddenly, Krishna made himself heavy, like he was the whole universe. So she couldn't carry him, and she became bewildered, because she thought, maybe it's a ghost, some sort of mystical being, is trying to possess my Krishna, and therefore he's becoming heavy. So, immediately, her natural propensity to become deeply concerned for even the slightest little thing out of order with Krishna, immediately that mood just sort of exploded. And she put Krishna down and she's trying to figure out, what's going on? Should I call the Brahmins to chant mantras, or what on earth, what to do? Then suddenly, but actually, the thing is, and this is explained in the Bhagavatam, Krishna did it deliberately, because he knew Trinavarta was coming. But he knew Mother Yashoda would not let go of him. She was like permanently carrying Krishna. She wouldn't let go of him. Therefore, Trinavarta wouldn't have been able to steal him. And what would the result of that have been? Well, the sort of esoteric result would have been that Krishna's desire was to travel high and look down on Vrindavan and see. So Trinavarta, it appears, carried him for 1 hour. And Krishna was just enjoying seeing the sights of Vrajmandala. And this was just, it was just great fun. And this is what Krishna wanted via Trinavarta, although Trinavarta had another idea. But it wouldn't have been possible if Mother Yashoda had just been holding on to him and holding on to him. So he had to do something to force her to release him. So he did that. However, in the next minute or next few seconds or something, Trinavarta appeared on the scene, covered by the whirlwind. And, you know, it was just like this huge dust storm just erupted there, and nobody could see anything. And then Trinavarta came, and this is just seconds later. He just picked up Krishna like that. So Krishna, you know, it's specifically stated that he weighed as much as the whole universe when Mother Yashoda put him down. Seconds later, he weighed nothing, very little. And Trinavarta easily picked him up and took him up 800,000 miles, 100,000 yojanas. And Krishna was having a great time. So, of course, his idea, Trinavarta's idea, was to kill Krishna somehow. Somehow. I don't know even exactly how he was going to do it. But somehow he intended killing Krishna. But Krishna was holding on to his throat. And Krishna was cruising around, just checking things out and enjoying himself. Then after an hour, Krishna decided, right, that's enough. And he started slowly increasing his pressure on Trinavarta's throat. And Trinavarta noticed it. And Trinavarta thought, wow, okay, I'm just going to get rid of this child. He just wanted to sort of throw him away. But then he found he couldn't break Krishna's grip. And Trinavarta became a little astonished. What an amazing child. And Krishna was becoming heavier and heavier. So Trinavarta found he was losing altitude. He was losing altitude and gradually sort of heading towards the ground. Okay, throw away Krishna. So he became astonished. I can't bear the weight of this child, but I can't get him off my throat. So then Krishna really put the squeeze on. And Trinavarta, he became totally strangled, couldn't breathe, his eyes almost popped right out. And Trinavarta fell from 800,000 miles onto one rock. So you know what happens to you if you fall from 800,000 miles onto a rock? Well, it tends to be a bit of a mess. So there was a bit of a mess. Prabhupada puts it very nicely, as usual. When he fell and he smashed on the ground, that while the gopis who had gathered, because they're now looking for Krishna, where's Krishna? The demon fell from the sky onto a big slab of stone, his limbs dislocated. Well, yes, we can imagine. Maybe have been bits and pieces all over the place. Yeah. So Prabhupada puts it in a very sober way. His limbs dislocated, his body just smashed by the impact. And there was Krishna sitting on top of him. Fine. No problems. Smiling, laughing, and just sort of everything was fine. So everyone was happy. Everyone was happy except Trinavarta. And that's the essence of the pastime, really. So then the anatha, you know, this is a very important anatha. The propensity to be, for one's consciousness to be influenced by, you know, material standards. And therefore one's perspective on Krishna becomes influenced by those standards. There's a very interesting statement by Prabhupada here, which I located, which gives the idea how it works, gives it very nicely. To a person who's always absorbed in the thought of snakes, a rope always appears as a snake. In other words, how you think, you'll see. How you think, you'll see. So, similarly, to a person bewildered by material qualities and devoid of knowledge of the Absolute, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in terms of their diverse, bewildered conclusions. So as you think, as your attitudes are and your perspective on reality is, you will conceive of Krishna like that. Just like when Krishna and Balaram entered the wrestling arena in Mathura. It's described there in the Bhagavatam. All these different people saw him in different ways. The gopis or the young teenage girls and so on, they saw him as very handsome young fellow, very attractive. The adults, the parents, they saw him as this helpless little child, sort of like walking into the den of lions, approaching these wrestlers. It's like terrible. They felt this is just immoral. These delicate little children. But the wrestlers, they saw Krishna and Balaram as death. You know, terribly fearful. And, you know, different people saw them in different ways. And there were some, yogis into Paramatma realization. When they saw Krishna and Balaram, they saw these two four-armed people walking out into the arena. There were some impersonalists. So what did they say? What did they see? They saw these two lights, like a couple of light bulbs, floating out into the arena. They were some Buddhists, or, you know, not exactly Buddhists, but that sort of Shunyavadi type people. So what did they see? They saw nothing. Really? Yeah, because reality is nothing to them. So they saw nothing. So it's like that. And Prabhupada puts it here very nicely, that for someone who's absorbed in the thought of snakes, a rope always appears as a snake. So that for those who are thinking of God in material terms, or those who think in material, certain types of material terms, they'll conceive of the Lord like that. You know, people who in the bodily concept of life, they hear that God is powerful. He's the most powerful. So they'll think of God as, you know, some big weightlifter or something like that. Rambo, or I don't know who, but, you know, Charles Atlas, big, muscle-bound, like, freak or something. Even there are women now who do it, aren't there? Anyway, like this, some super macho, gross-looking, over-muscled creature. Those, when they hear that he's the oldest, then they'll think of him as being like the ultimate senior citizen. You know, the people who you don't see. The people they keep in the old age homes and you don't see them. Unless you go in and you really sort of check it out. I remember we were, many years ago in England, we were going to buy a new property. And we went to look at one old age home. And we went into one of the rooms. And there were like 10 old people sitting in chairs. And they were just so old. I don't know how they were alive. Each one was sitting there just looking. They were not conscious of each other's presence. And so old, they must have had to have been carried around. So therefore, they have pictures. You see pictures sometimes. God is sitting on a cloud. This old man playing the harp, something like that. So this is what happens. It is a very interesting conversation of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's, which was recorded. But the actual recording doesn't exist, but it's the transcript exists. He's preaching to an American professor about the Das Avatars, the 10 popular avatars of Lord Vishnu. And you know Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, if you've read Brahma Samhita, his commentary on Brahma Samhita, you know, his command of the English language is just something else. Very difficult to follow. So he gives this, you know, deeply philosophical description of the 10 avatars in this high English, and I think this poor little American professor could follow neither. And at the end he asked the professor, so, how did you like that? And the professor said, well, I'll have to think about it. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, no. Don't think about it. Hear about it. Don't think about it. If you think about it with your material mind, you'll just come up with all sorts of distorted ideas. But you hear about it from the devotees. Then two things will be there. One is you'll get the right idea. And the other is, there's a certain quality to that transcendental sound vibration, which just through the quality of that sound vibration, it sort of surcharges your mind, so you may be able to understand that, you know, it has like a purifying effect on the mind. So this is a very important thing. Very important thing. How, you know, Krishna's so big, our minds, they're like this size, right? That, by that, by that, or whatever. And we're trying to fit in Krishna, who's like, you know, so big. Trying to fit Krishna in there. What sort of compression program would you need to get him in? Boy, I tell you what, they haven't come up with that one yet. So when you try and do that, you know, it won't fit. It won't work. So you get something goes in, but it gets mixed up with all the existing, you know, propensities and tendencies and attitudes. But so much doesn't get in anyway. And what does get in gets all mixed up with all this junk. And the end is just more junk. And this is the problem, isn't it? This is the problem. In religion, pretty much. Yeah. So therefore Prabhupada wanted us to read his books, because then we get the right idea. He's presented things so nicely. But then, you know, I was thinking a lot about this. Lord, what does Lord Brahma say? Lord Brahma says, Vedeshu Dolabam. Adolabam Atma Bhakto. So Lord Brahma says, it's very difficult to understand Krishna just by studying the Vedas. But you can understand easily Adolabam Atma Bhakto if you have devotion. And then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pritipurvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yanamam Upiyanti Te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So sometimes there may be a tendency, some people sometimes, to think, we don't need to read the books. If we just serve, Krishna will reveal everything anyway. So why bother reading? Let's just become Krishna conscious workaholics and, you know, just go for it morning to night. Yeah. Now, someone, who was it? Devamrita Maharaj was telling me yesterday, he had a conversation like almost 30, well, in 1976, I think, with Rameshwar, who, you know, was very prominent, but he then fell away, and he's sort of around somewhere, but not directly involved. And Rameshwar was telling him that when I'm chanting japa and the phone rings, you know what I'll do, don't you? And Maharaj said he told him at that time, yeah, that's the problem. You know what he'd do, don't you? He would answer the phone. He would stop chanting and answer the phone. So should we become transcendental workaholics and work hard for Krishna, and Krishna will reveal everything, so we don't have to read all these books because they're so big. And my God. Well, not really. Prabhupada wanted us to read his books. Prabhupada wanted us to read his books, but Vedeshu Dulabam. it's difficult just by studying the Vedas. So how does it work? How does it really work? Well, I came across, I was doing a little research, I came across a very nice statement by Yamunacharya. It's in Stotra Ratna, if you don't know if you're familiar with that at all. Beautiful poem by Yamunacharya. He says that, he's talking about Krishna, and he says, he talks about Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas. He says, these are not just books. These are the thoughts which are sheltered deep within your heart. You know, we may not have thought of Bhagavad Gita, perhaps, as the thoughts sheltered deep within Krishna's heart before. You know, what thoughts are sheltered deep within your heart? Well, you know, if you're a married person, it may be your affection for your spouse, for your child, your children, your affection for your spiritual master, isn't it? When we talk about the thoughts which are sheltered deep within our heart, we're talking about the most intimate and personal parts of our being. So Yamunacharya says, this is what Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic literatures are. These very intimate thoughts about of Krishna. Just like, you know, did you ever have someone walk up to you and say, you know, I love you? I mean, seriously, I actually love you. And I really want to develop a relationship with you. But you don't know. But could we do it? I don't know if you've ever had. People normally don't do that, do they? You know, in material life, if a boy or a girl, you know, they're attracted to each other, they don't just walk up normally, do they? And say, wow, you look really good to me. They sort of, you know, maneuver socially and chit-chat a bit. You know, oh, nice weather today. And gradually sort of get into something more personal. But in Bhagavad Gita, what is Krishna saying? Krishna is telling not just you, like one person. He's telling the world, you know, actually I love you. And I really want to have a relationship with you. But, you know, you're oblivious somehow. But I really want to do this. In other words, it's not just a book of philosophy. A plus B equals C. You know, something like that. We're talking about Krishna, the person, is coming before us and just very straight out saying, I want to have a relationship with you, a very deep relationship. I think we can. Do you want to try? Let's try. And if you want to try, here's how we can do it. I mean, like, the right way. Don't just sort of, you know, do it anyway. But here's how you can do it. We can develop a relationship. So, you know, Bhagavad Gita, Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness, etc. We may not have thought about it in these terms, but actually, Krishna, if you really look behind the scenes, and even not so much behind the scenes, because he's quite explicit in some places, he is just coming out and just doing like that. It's really, you know, if you just walk up to someone and tell them that you love them, in material society, isn't it? You run the risk of becoming a laughingstock. If they decide they're not interested in you, but you've just been so open like that, they may go and tell all their friends and you become like a silly fool. So, but Krishna is taking that risk. He's just presenting himself. Here I am for you. Take me. So it's really amazing, actually, what Krishna's doing. Therefore, and you know what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam, there he's just sort of like pouring out his heart. Bhagavad Gita is kind of the first step. Let's develop a relationship, coming to an agreement. Okay, we'll do it. But Srimad Bhagavatam, it's very open. Krishna is leaving himself very open. So, when someone does that, you know, obviously they're going to be concerned what's going to happen. So Krishna, he's revealing his heart, but to people who are not devotees, it doesn't seem like that. Yeah, so they don't understand. Therefore they think Bhagavad Gita is like just a book of, you know, all different types of yogas. Prabhupada said that sometimes some people think Bhagavad Gita is like a box of transcendental assorted chocolates, or just assorted chocolates. You get a box of chocolates, all different types, and you just choose. Different people will choose different chocolates according to their tastes. So some people think Bhagavad Gita is like that. Krishna's presenting, oh, if you like to do karma yoga, do it. If you want to do dhyana yoga, do it. If you want to do some sacrifice, just many different opportunities. And that there's no specific message. You know, there's one conversation of Prabhupada's with one man in Bombay. And this man is telling Prabhupada, he's like a Hindu enthusiast. He says, this Bhagavad Gita, oh, I like Bhagavad Gita. He said, I am liking Bhagavad Gita too much, which is a lot. So I'm liking Bhagavad Gita too much. And he said, particularly at the end, when Krishna says, hey Arjuna, now I've explained so many things to you, now you can just do whatever I like. Oh, I like that part the most. Yeah, so people, you know, with their distorted viewpoints and distorted thinking processes, they look at Bhagavad Gita like that, or Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, the 10th canto they think is just boy-girl pastimes, and whatever they think. Yeah. But actually it's very intimate. Krishna is being so open and just so personal. It's incredible. But he's so clever that unless you've got the right consciousness, you won't pick it up. You'll think it's something else. And so Krishna remains free from you. Yeah. Just like, you know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, somewhere, I forget exactly where, Krishnadas Kaviraj says that this Chaitanya, these pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, they're so nice, the devotees will just relish it. But the pig-like non-devotees will not understand anything, and I'm very happy about that. Yeah, he's happy. And, you know, the pig-like non-devotees, because some of them, scholars at least, they read it and they see that and they don't like it. They really don't like it. And of course they don't understand it because they think, yes, it's a book. You know, I'm reading it. I understand it. So what's the problem? What's he talking about? Even in the beginning of Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says, the devotees will relish this book. And the non-devotees, I warn away with my curse. Don't read it. And the curse is, you try to read it, you won't understand it. So it's only if one has that eye of devotion that one will understand. Even, you know, this very interesting comment by Baladev Vijayabhushan, his closing comment for his Bhagavad Gita commentary. So he's closing and he's summing up and concluding. And he says that, originally the devotees asked me to write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And I thought, Bhagavad Gita? It's a book of philosophy. I don't know if I really want to write a commentary on it. Then he says, but the devotees, they asked me, so I felt that I have to. So I did, because they asked me. But, you know, in other words, I wasn't really attracted, but just as a duty, I did it. Because it's just a book of sort of dry philosophy or something. So then he says, as I was writing my commentary, Bhagavad Gita became like an ocean. And then it seemed as if Krishna put me on a boat as I was writing. And he pushed me out into the ocean of Bhagavad Gita. Then suddenly, the boat sank. And it became like a submarine. And I found myself diving deeper and deeper into the ocean of Bhagavad Gita. And as I was diving deeper and deeper, I started finding so many jewels in the meanings that now I've finished, but now I don't want to come out. And that's the end of his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. You know how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur finishes his commentary? Are you familiar with that? He doesn't finish the whole Bhagavad Gita. He stops at verse 73 in the 18th chapter. There's 78 verses. He doesn't comment on the last five. And in his closing notes, he says, you may wonder why I am finishing my Bhagavad Gita commentary here. And I haven't actually finished the whole book. He said, I did write a commentary on the last five verses, but Lord Ganesh became attracted to it, and he sent one rat, and the rat stole my commentary on the last five verses. So if he wants it, let him have it, and I will finish here. Anyway, that's another thing. But, you know, this is like the dimension there, that these books, you know, they're very wonderful in so many ways, but when you really get down to it, here we have Krishna presenting himself and the possibility, just revealing the most intimate thoughts which are deepest in his heart, and he doesn't want them revealed to everyone. So his strategy is not like censorship, you know, in anyone under a certain age, they're not allowed to buy the book or see the movie or something like that. His strategy is anyone can buy the book, but I won't give them the intelligence to understand it unless I want to. Unless I feel it's appropriate. In other words, unless I feel they're the type of person whom I might enter into a relationship with. Yeah. So it's nice. I thought that was a very interesting perspective on these things. There's In the 12th chapter, from verse 13 to 20, Krishna explains different qualities. If you like this, if you like that, if you like something else, then you'll become very dear to me. So many qualities. How you can endear yourself to Krishna. So Prabhupada gave one lecture on verse 13, the first verse. 13 and 14 actually. And Prabhupada began the lecture. He made a very nice statement. Prabhupada said, yes, this is Krishna consciousness. In all these verses, in these verses, Krishna is saying, do this, do that, you'll become dear to me. So Prabhupada says, yes, this is Krishna consciousness. How will Krishna love me? How will Krishna love me? I think normally, or more often than not, we think, how will I love Krishna? But if you turn it around, it can become, how will Krishna love me? In other words, what do I need to do with me? With my life and my mind and everything I am? So that Krishna will come to the point of saying, right, you, I want you. I'm taking you. You are mine. Yes. So, like this. So, how do we get this then? How do we become qualified? Well, of course, mercy. There's another interesting incident with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta when one big Hindu scholar came to visit him. Big, big Hindu scholar. With big, big sort of Hindu questions to ask the big Swami, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So the man came, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, well, you know, I'd be happy to answer your questions, but I'm a little busy right now. I'll be with you shortly. But in the meantime, this was in the temple room on the other side, there are some young brahmacharis, you know, means like early 20s. And this man is a big scholar, he's probably 50 or so. So here are these young boys in their 20s cleaning the deity brass, the arati paraphernalia. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, why don't you go and ask those boys in the meantime? So this man, he looked at the boys, they're young enough to be his children, and he's the big scholar. And he thought, wow, really? That's a bit strange. But because he was a Hindu or whatever reason, he thought, okay, all right. So he went over and asked the boys. Said, you know, I've got all these questions and I'd like to ask you. They said, sure, fine, no problem. The problem is we're busy cleaning the brass. But if you help us clean the brass, we'll finish more quickly, then we'll answer your questions. So again, he was a little astonished. What? Now they want me to become free labor during this menial task, which a child could do. But then he said, oh, okay. For a while, he's cleaning the brass and thinking, what a situation, and my questions, and this question, that question. Suddenly, the answers started coming to his questions. And he was surprised. Oh, where did that come from? Yeah, that makes sense. Hey, that's a good answer. I didn't think of that. Then he carried on cleaning a little further. Then another answer came. So all his questions were answered. Then they finished cleaning the brass and the boys said, okay, fine, now we're finished. What are your questions? Well, I don't really have any questions now. Then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta came and said, okay, I'm free now. What are your questions? And he said the same thing. You know, the answers came as I was cleaning this brass. I can't believe it. I never thought of things in those ways. So then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta quoted, what is that verse? Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita janayat yasu vairagyam gyanam chayad ahoitukam. That if you render devotional service to Krishna, then causelessly detachment and knowledge develop within the heart. Now, of course, causelessly does not mean, you know, just like literally out of nowhere at all. Actually out of nowhere. It means from nowhere material. It means from Krishna. He's reciprocating. So that man was not a devotee, really. He was just like, you know, a Hindu. He was not a devotee. But because he did some service in a submissive way, Krishna gave him some intelligence. So it's like this, it's like that with us. If we become a little surrendered, little bit of service attitude is there, then understanding will come. Then we'll be able to understand Prabhupada's books. Otherwise, you know, how often does it happen that we pick up a book and the next thing we know we're waking up? Or something like that. I mean, I know for a fact that for some devotees it's sometimes like that. Or if not that, we pick up the book and after half an hour we think, boy, what did I just read? Isn't it? Not so much really goes in. It kind of bounces off or goes in one ear and out the other or whatever it may be. Yeah. So if we cultivate the service spirit, then realization will come through the heart. That's there. But also we'll be able to understand very vividly and very clearly Prabhupada's books. And what is it? It's Krishna reciprocating on the basis of his desire to have a relationship with you. In other words, as soon as you see that you're understanding, you're absorbing, it's becoming clear in proper Krishna conscious terms, then you must know this is Krishna reciprocating. It's not just that I'm clever or, you know, I've heard these things so many times that I just know it. It doesn't work like that. It never works like that. But it's Krishna kind of letting you step into his heart a little. Yeah. So for that, material scholarship will not help. In fact, it'll just be an obstacle. Just a horrible obstacle. And everything will become just like distorted and perverted like mad. And Krishna will become a fairy tale figure or, you know, some nonsense of some sort. So this we can learn. This we can learn from Trinavarta, how not to get blinded and how to maintain the right attitude, the service attitude as we're studying Prabhupada's books. Now, I notice we've gone a little over time. So, if you don't mind, we won't take any questions. One day we'll see. Oh. Uh-huh. So, why the cart? Well, that's a good question. Why the cart? I mean, you don't get so many people being killed by stationary carts, do you? So, the idea is, he was intending dropping on Krishna and crushing him. Yeah. He was full of, you know, tons of pots and household utensils. He was just going to drop on Krishna and crush him. Just one little concluding note about this thing about Trinavarta. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta made the comment that Trinavarta, when it comes to devotees, Trinavarta may represent not just a propensity to material scholarship, but a propensity to disloyal controversy. You know, asking loaded questions, in other words, and twisted questions. You know what I mean? Disloyal controversy. You may ask questions, but if the mind becomes contaminated, then like insincere questions, yeah, being interested in subjects, but they're not important. So this disloyal controversy, you know, with all due respect, isn't it the same in the Gaudiya Mutt? You know, what's the difference? Anyway, that may not be a very good example, but something like that, a loaded question maybe. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. All right. So he sat down.